I cried like a baby. Cry me a river. He certainly made me cry. So I loved it.
Right? Oh, you were sitting on that joke. Yeah, I can tell.
I was.
Had that ready for ages.
I switched off after my review and I was just like, okay, get it in there. When do I say it? Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Dan and Joe Film Show. Hope you're well and staying safe wherever you are around the world. A big thank you to our listeners. And if you've just joined in to listen to us for this episode, a big thank you to you. Hope you're all staying safe. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime. He's the better half. He's my Malcolm and Marie. Please welcome to the show, Joe Richards.
The Malcolm and Marie. I'll take that. I'll definitely take that. I think you got the best of the both worlds there.
You've got the sexiness and the aggression in one, you know?
Yeah. The sexiness being who maybe that's another story. But thank you, Dan. How are you feeling today? If you're like me, you are absolutely freezing.
It's very cold. And there was a bit of snow coming and it started and didn't really, you know, go anywhere. A bit like my career. So, but it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good. Yeah, so it's freezing today. So we're both wearing our turtlenecks today.
Yeah, we are. We didn't discuss our wardrobe before coming on, and now we look like brothers. Some weird type brother thing going on. It's embarrassing. But yeah, it was lovely. It flurried a little bit earlier on, and I'm not going to lie, I felt so cool because I'm currently in the middle of doing a 3-week running program, which I've mentioned on the show before, because I can't run on concrete for love or money. So during lockdown, I was like, I need to do something on my lunch break and do a 3-week running course and learn how to run on concrete for an extended period of time. And today it was like flurrying with snow as I was running. Not gonna lie, felt like Rocky Balboa. I felt so good. It was amazing. I don't know how I looked. I probably looked ridiculous, but I had like the soundtrack on as well, like the Bill Conti soundtrack. And I've also combined it with some of the songs from Creed as well, which has also got a fantastic soundtrack. Honestly, I've not felt that cool in a long, long time, even though I probably looked a little bit ridiculous.
But can I just ask, is this Rocky in the first film or like Rocky Balboa when he's like 70 and dying? Which one were you?
A little bit of both. It started off in the power walk at the beginning. I was in Rocky 1. And then by the end of it, I was Rocky Balboa. Yeah, like falling on my ass. But yeah.
Oh, well, good for you. Good for exercising. You're better than me. I come home and I just kind of lie on the sofa and just, you know, watch films. So you're
that's
much
okay
better than me.
Too. There's no judgment during lockdown. Okay. They'll be talking about other things in the future. They won't be discussing, you know, what each individual person did. You're okay, I think.
Okay, that's brilliant. And yeah, really exciting show today. We've got lots of good films to talk about. I feel like this is a really good week for movies, mainly because all of them feel like mainstream, as if they were supposed to be released in the cinemas, but haven't. So a good selection of films this week, which I'm excited to talk about. And more excited to introduce our guest for today's episode. You may know him, he's a writer and film reviewer from Long Island, New York. He's been on YouTube now for over 10 years. He's been hailed as YouTube's most reliable movie critic, so we'll see if that holds up today. But please welcome the one, the only, Tom Chattelbash. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, welcome.
How's it going, guys? I wish I got the turtleneck memo, because now I feel naked.
You're all good. You're wearing Hollister, so it's fine.
Look, it's not a paid promotion, but, you know, it's just a comfy shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, price is below. Price is below, people.
Exactly.
how are you? I was saying to Joe that I've been a big fan of yours. I've watched your reviews for many, many years since I was young. How's 2021 going for you so far over in New York?
Well, considering 2020 was, 2020, it's decent. It's not bad. You know, we're trying to bounce back from 2020 like everyone else is. Things are like slowly starting to open up a little bit, but, you know, people are still struggling here. And it's also, you know, I'm trying to keep myself sane, as is everyone else. I'm sure you can understand that.
Definitely, definitely. And how have you find theaters being closed? Did they open for a brief period? Because I know New York City, the cases have been very high. And I know you've kind of had a very easing of restrictions. Have you been able to go to the theaters at all last year?
Yeah, I actually got to go a couple times last year. Like, I think the last movie I saw right before, like literally right before we locked down, was like The Hunt. Well, I don't know if you remember that movie, yes. But like it came out like back in March. I mean, no one remembers that movie. It's fine. But like that was the last one I saw before lockdown. And then I didn't get to see another movie in theaters till I think September, when I saw Tenet in theaters, which was a great like grand return to theaters. Even though I couldn't hear a thing in terms of dialogue, it was still great to be back. Still great to be back. And then the last movie I saw in theaters was Freaky. And then basically there was nothing else coming to theaters. So I haven't been back since.
We can totally relate to the Tenet experience, because when we went to watch it, my ears were bleeding. It was so loud. And I was like, am I just not adjusting to this? Or so, yeah.
No. I totally get it. Cause the opening scene, it's so loud. As soon as it started, like I leaned over and I like looked at my sister. I was like, welcome back to the movies. Am I right? Like, I was like, wow.
Oh, definitely. I know, 100%. And we haven't seen Freaky yet. It hasn't even been released over here. So you're very lucky to have seen that.
And
that
we are annoyed by that, because we've been looking forward to Freaky for so long.
It's a fun
one.
It's a fun movie. I think you guys would like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we love like Happy Death Day and
yeah, it's very like similar in terms of that. Very like same feel. I mean, they keep saying there might be like a crossover, which would be like Freaky Death Day or something like that. I'd be down, because they feel like they could take place in the same universe. So that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be very cool.
Definitely. And how are you finding streaming at home? Because I love streaming. You know, it's helped us a lot on the show, where we have like, there's no new releases in cinemas and they've been closed. But I struggle getting through a film at home. I pause quite a lot and I have to go make myself food. And I struggle to actually sit and focus. How are you finding streaming at the minute?
Man, I mean, I kind of have like a similar problem where like, I feel like when I'm in a movie theater, I like the fact that it kind of forces me to not be on my phone, because I feel like when I'm at home and I'm streaming something, even if it's like a new movie, I always tend to like find myself like, oh, what does this movie have on IMDb, or like, who's in this, or what's Twitter saying about this? And the next thing I know, I just missed 10 minutes of the movie and I got to go back. So like, I feel like I like the movie theater experience of like feeling like I can't be on my phone. But like, it's still great seeing new releases at home. It makes me feel like there's still something to like look forward to movie-wise every week, because something new is premiering on this streaming service or that streaming service. But I think it's not as fun, obviously, as going to the movies. But, you know, I'll take it. You know, I love seeing new movies, so I'll take it.
Definitely. And tell us a little about your YouTube channel, because you've been on YouTube for many, many years. And then a year or so ago, you switched channels to Channel Bash Reviews. So tell us, how did you get into reviewing films on YouTube? What was that like?
That was like 2008 was when I started my first channel, and I was in like maybe ninth grade, and I had no idea what I was doing. No idea. And I remember like to this day, my first review was Madagascar 2. And I mean, I know it was a must-see review, must-see. but I remember that was like my first video, and it was so awkward. And I think it's actually still on that original channel. I love how that channel has basically become like a time capsule for myself. Like I can go back to like 2010 and be like, oh, what was Tom like back then? Oh, he was a psychopath. Got it. but it started then. And then I, you know, was doing it for, you know, about 10 years, dropped off a little bit when I went to college, because I wanted to focus on that. And I didn't want to like distract myself too much and just kind of enjoy the experience. And then I just decided to start a new channel, because it just felt like my old channel was feeling a little bit stale. I kind of needed to shake things up a little bit. So I started my new channel early last year, I believe, and it's been really fun. You know, I've been definitely doing a wider range of videos, which has been great. It's one of those things where I've been doing this for, I think, like 12 years now, and it's still fun, which just tells me that I'm on, you know, I'm doing the right thing. So I can't complain.
Definitely. Yeah. And we love your reviews, and we think they're great. Also, you are a writer too, and you have written many articles for Screen Rant, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. What's that like writing compared to doing video reviews? Obviously, you prefer doing video reviews, right?
Right. I mean, it's just, you get more fun, you know, when you're doing a video review, especially you can like inject a little bit more humor. And sometimes when you're writing for any sort of publication, it's like, sometimes there's certain guidelines you got to follow. Sometimes you have a little more creative freedom, but even still, I think there's way more fun to be had on camera than, you know, in print. But I love writing, which is why I love to like kind of just write for whoever, you know, will take me basically, and whoever like wants to hear my views on things. Screen Rant, I think, was just mainly like movie news and stuff, where I got to kind of give my little take on this bit of news or that bit of news, which is fun. But I've also been able to do like written reviews, which is great, because, you know, like those kind of skills, you want to keep honing them, you want to keep them sharp, you don't want to lay them, you know, like gathering dust. But definitely in terms of like, which one do I enjoy more? definitely video reviews, not even a comparison.
Oh, brilliant. Well, it's great to have you. Really exciting show today. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot of good films to review. The first thing we're going to talk about, obviously, if you've been living under a rock for the last week, you probably have not heard about this, but the Golden Globes are arriving, which is strange because they normally come out back in January, right? At the start of January, right at the start of the year, but obviously with because of COVID, they've been delayed. So we have the 78th Golden Globes taking place on February 28th. The nominees have been announced. We've got Tina Fey and Amy Poehler returning, who I absolutely love. They make me cry. They actually make me cry with laughter. I love them so much.
So good, so good.
And they're hosting from different locations, so that's going to be very interesting to try and sort that out. But looking at the nominations, so quickly, we've got Best Motion Picture. We've got The Father, Mank, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, and The Trial of Chicago 7 for the kind of the big Best Motion Picture category. How do we feel about these nominations, Tom? Have you seen many of these?
I've seen a good majority of those. I think the only ones I haven't seen in that bunch are Mank and The Father. And the only reason I haven't seen Mank, I love David Fincher, so usually I'm like hopping on that. But this is embarrassing to admit. Citizen Kane is a movie, one of those classics I just haven't taken the time to just sit down and watch. It's just one of those movies where like, one day it'll happen and it's going to happen and I'll watch it because I feel like that Mank will like benefit from having seen Citizen Kane. So I feel kind of wrong watching Mank beforehand. So haven't seen that one. I've heard great things about The Father, especially because of Anthony Hopkins, who I hear is like incredible in it. But I have seen Trial of the Chicago 7. Nomadland, I think, is coming to Hulu soon. So I'll be able to watch that. What was the other one? Am I missing one?
Promising Young Woman, which has got a lot of praise. Yeah.
Great movie. Really hoping that one actually kind of like has like an Oscar underdog, dark horse kind of win. I would love that. But it seems like the tide's kind of turning for Trial of the Chicago 7 kind of like Argo-ing this year, where like no one expects it to really win. And then it just like wins the big prizes of the night, but also a really good movie too.
What about you, Joe? Any surprises on the list?
Not really. I mean, it's tough because obviously in the UK, we're still in that position where we haven't had a lot of these released yet. Nomadland, heard nothing but great things, but we haven't had a chance to see that yet. Promising Young Woman was due for release this Friday, and suddenly it's just disappeared off of like every website. So everyone's like, where's it gone? What's going on with it? So that is very frustrating because that just, from the imagery and the trailers and everything I've seen of that so far, that's just got me written all over it. Very excited for that one. I didn't necessarily predict that the Trial of Chicago 7 was going to get as many nominations. Obviously, it's just behind Mank in terms of the amount of nominations that it's had across the board. I was a little bit surprised by that. It's a great film. I thoroughly enjoyed that. But I kind of predicted that Mank was going to be the kind of big one of this award season. And I wasn't a fan of it. I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay. But I do not understand why it's gotten the amount of hype that it has behind it. I think it's got a fantastic performance from Gary Oldman. But more importantly than that, Amanda Seyfried. She is amazing in it. She's absolutely brilliant. And unfortunately, she's been snubbed. She's not been nominated. So I think that's a shame. Citizen Kane, I do love that film. So again, maybe it was that instance where Mank just couldn't live up to the subject that it was actually about.
Yeah, definitely. And also you've got Best Motion Picture Musical Comedy. Now, this is a really interesting category because just the films they've nominated, I just don't know how to kind of conceive it. So you've got Borat Subsequent Movie Film being nominated. Okay. Hamilton, which I would say is more of a theatre play, but they recorded it, didn't they? And they put it on Disney Plus, so I guess it's a film now. Music, directed by Sia, starring Kate Hudson, which is getting a lot of controversy, which we're not going to get it. And Palm Springs, which has not been released over here yet. And The Prom.
Great movie.
Palm Springs was announced today, actually, for, I think, an April 23rd release. And again, that is another instance where the word of mouth for that film it's just incredible on Twitter, on all the social medias, just people are singing its praises. And I'm really looking forward to watching that one. The Hamilton debate, that is, I will admit, when I watch Hamilton, because obviously I've heard the hype, I've not been fortunate enough to see it live. So when it came on to Disney Plus, I was straight on it. I didn't give it a rating on Letterboxd. Because did I see it as a film? Not really. So it does kind of come. I think a lot of people are going to be debating that. What do you think, Tom? Do you count it as a film or more of a live theater recording?
Oh, man. I mean, personally for me, like, I get how people are trying to like say, oh, it's a film, because look, I mean, I think it's incredible, and I'm like, yeah, it would be great for it to see it win in one of those categories, but I don't really consider it a film. I just consider it a recording of a play.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're kind of controversial, but I agree, guys, definitely. And then quickly, you've got Best Actress nominations. You've got Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I love Viola Davis. She seems to, she's like the Meryl Streep, isn't she? She keeps popping up in these nominations. Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday. Again, another film that hasn't been released over here yet. Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman. Interesting. Frances McDormand, Nomadland. And then you've got Carrie Mulligan. So for Pieces of Promising Young Woman. So very, very competitive in that category. But what do you guys think? Which ones do you think you put your bets on?
I mean, I haven't seen Nomadland or Pieces of a Woman, but Viola Davis was crazy good in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. She was one of the best performances in that movie. Chadwick was incredible too. And also Carrie Mulligan was great in Promising Young Woman. But if I were to put my money on someone, I think I'd go Viola Davis. I think she has a better performance. I think Carrie Mulligan's very good in Promising Young Woman, but I never saw it as like Oscar worthy. Like it was good, but I think Viola Davis kind of like just like chews up the screen in Ma Rainey's.
Then obviously we've got Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture. We have Riz Ahmed for The Sound of Metal, which, Joe, I know you're really excited to see.
So excited to see that one.
Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is kind of a shoo-in, right? He's going to win this, Chadwick. And then you've got Anthony Hopkins, Gary for The Father, Gary Oldman for Mank, and Tahar Rahim for The Mauritanian. I've completely butchered that name, but we're going to move on. So what do you guys think? Do you think Chadwick Boseman's got this one in the bag?
I mean, I think so.
Yeah, his performance was incredible. And I think you know, it'd be right as well to honor him. I think it'd be, you know, quite bittersweet if he did win that. And his performance, it does have legs. I've not seen Riz Ahmed in The Sound of Metal yet, and I'm very intrigued to see his performance in that, because again, I've heard nothing but good things. Anthony Hopkins, Gary Oldman, no matter how great their performances are, and I think Gary's is fine, I don't think it's his best performance that he's ever given. I think it would be nice to see, you know, somebody else sort of win for a change, and somebody unique, and Chadwick Boseman's performance in that film is just such a powerful kind of last swan song for the actor. So it'd be lovely to see him win the award.
Well, fingers crossed for Chadwick. And yeah, like I said, you can catch the 78th Golden Globes on February 28th on TV or wherever you watch it. So exciting to see. Moving on now to our final news segment for today, and very sad news. You know, we don't like reporting about, you know, passing away, but Christopher Plummer, who's best known as Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music, sadly passed away at the age of 91. Very sad news. Tom, were you saddened by this? Obviously, how did you find out about this news?
I mean, I found out about it on social media, and it's definitely saddening because I think he's an incredibly talented actor. I was really bummed to hear about his passing. I mean, I wanted to see him take more Kevin Spacey roles. I was excited, but it's when this happens, it just makes you think back, like, what are your favorite performances? Like, why did you love this actor so much? I mean, even just seeing him in Knives Out recently, I love the presence he brings to any movie he's in. He's got this gravitas. He has like this warm sensibility. I really love seeing him in any movie. And then he can be super evil. Like, watch a movie like Inside Man, where he's this like super evil closeted Nazi guy. Like, it's just like, you understand that this guy could basically play anyone. And I was really sad because he was incredibly talented.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're both big fans of Knives Out, and I feel like he was the glue that kind of brought everything together in that film. He was just excellent. Joe, what about you?
Like Tom was saying, just really sad, because he was the type of actor where whatever he was in, you knew whatever the film was like, you were going to get a good Christopher Plummer performance at least. And he was the type of actor where he would have fun as well. You know, he'd do the super serious stuff, but then he'd have fun. He would gladly be in Star Trek. He was an actor who was just talented. Like Tom rightly said, he had that gravitas, but he would have fun as well. And I think when you look back at his career, I mean, it's incredible. I didn't realize that he holds the record of being the oldest person to win an Oscar, like the oldest actor to win an Oscar. He won an Oscar at the age of 82. I found that shocking, that the guy just hadn't won an Oscar until he was 82 years of age. And the film I'd not actually seen, it's called Beginners.
Oh, great movie, yeah.
Yeah, so I've not actually seen that, so I can't comment on it. I've just found that incredible, because he is such a talented actor.
Definitely. I think that's really inspirational. It's like, never give up on your dreams, kids. Even if you're 82, you're going to get there, okay?
I mean, I think
a lot of kids are like, what? I'm not waiting till I'm 82. Yeah,
I think he'd been
close. You got to play the long game.
Yeah, exactly. And I definitely think he'd been close. He'd been close before. I know Russell Crowe said quite a lot of lovely things about him online because obviously they worked together on A Beautiful Mind. And Russell Crowe said himself, you know, it was a travesty that Christopher Plummer didn't get a win for his role in that. So he is just one. I couldn't believe it, to be honest, that he's only won one Oscar, and at that age, he does seem like the type of actor who would have had at least maybe two or three under his belt. And I think he will be, you know, he's had good innings. He's, you know, he's an old man, but he will still be very missed, I think, in the industry.
Children, who should we hear from next? The vote is unanimous. You, Captain.
Me? I don't understand.
Please.
No.
I'm told that a long time ago you were quite good.
Well, that was a very, very, very long time ago.
I remember, Father.
Play us something we know.
Please. Why didn't you tell me?
What?
To bring along my harmonica.
Okay, so the first film we're going to review, this is Palmer, which is streaming on Apple Plus TV. Probably never heard of it because they don't have many films on there. There's like a small catalogue of films, but they're pretty good movies. We talked about Greyhound last year with Tom Hanks, which I really liked a lot. Very kind of bigger budget, high quality film. So this stars Justin Timberlake, you know, JT, my man. I love Justin Timberlake, directed by Fisher Stevens. And this is a very different role for him. He plays an ex-convict who's just been released from prison. He goes back to his grandmother's house, starting to build his life back up, starting to get a job and kind of move away from his past. He was convicted over a crime that we later discover within the film. And basically he befriends a young boy played by Ryder Allen, who is a young boy who isn't really into sport. He isn't into kind of the masculine stereotype of what a young boy should be into. He loves fairies, he loves dressing up. And we see these two personalities kind of clash at first, but what happens is they develop a really, really lovely friendship between them. Here's a clip.
I'm glad you're back. I imagine it's gonna take some time getting used to. You just gotta get yourself back out there.
Palmer, you were all USA player 2 years in a row at Riverside?
Yes, sir. My whole life's changed.
That boy, that's Sam. His mama took off. He'll be staying with us till she's back.
You know you're a boy, right?
Yeah.
In the hours that I've known.
Do you know when my mom is coming back?
He's gonna have to go in the system.
There's something seriously wrong with that kid.
Would you set me free?
How did you end up in prison?
Don't matter. I did what I did.
bulk of what you did today.
Listen to me, son. Kids are mean, especially when they see something that they ain't used to seeing.
You ain't nothing but a criminal. You got no right looking after any child.
There's things in this world you can be, and there's things that you can't. How many boys do you see on that show?
None.
What does that tell you?
That I can be the first.
Trick or treat!
Ah, get some treats.
Truth is, I haven't felt like I was good at anything. Until Sam. Keep running to another fine
piece. Shelly came back. Keep
running to another fine piece. Get off me!
Hey!
Hey! What? You couldn't stay out of trouble, could you?
Can't abandon that boy.
Just set me free.
I will not abandon that boy.
Just set me free.
Heard y'all had a little tea party the other day.
Ooh, yeah.
Careful, Palmer. It's hot. Pinkies, please.
Mmm.
Yes.
Mmm. Real good.
So that was a clip there from Palmer, and I'm just going to kick it off. I really love this film a lot. I thought it was sweet, heartwarming, but what I loved as well is it balances really nicely between those moments and also some really dramatic, serious moments too. Juno Temple's in this, who I love, and I haven't seen her in so long. She plays the mother of Ryder Allen's character, and she's kind of a drug addict, an alcohol addict. There are some scenes towards the end which are really emotionally disturbing, really disturbing, and you're kind of just... You just want to grab the child and be like, run. So I really love this a lot. I think Justin Timberlake is excellent in here, and he's not going to get nominated for anything just because I feel like this isn't really kind of the role that Oscars go for now. It's a very stereotypical hardened man turned into like finds love again through this young boy. But I thought he was excellent as far as I'm concerned. Very nuanced, very minimalistic. I love when actors kind of deliver these really emotional performances but don't have to like shout in every scene. It's very stripped back from Justin Timberlake, and I thought he was great in this. I really, really did. Again, a really wholesome story, a really heartfelt story. Performances are excellent. Ryder Allen, he's such a talented young kid. I can't wait to see what he does. And of course, we've got June Squibb, who I love, and she's in everything. And I want her to be my grandmother. I really do. She's so cute. So yeah, I love this a lot. I thought this was, again, sweet, heartwarming, but also very emotional when it needs to be. What about you, Tom? What do you think of this?
I also really enjoyed this movie. I mean, like I said in my review, like it doesn't really reinvent the wheel. I mean, we've seen this story so many times. I mean, Adam Sandler even did it, and like Big Daddy. So like, we know that this is a story that we've seen time and time again. And I've always been a proponent for Justin Timberlake as an actor, because I honestly think he is very talented in front of the camera. Like, I feel like if you need to see him actually give a good performance, you know, watch The Social Network, watch Alpha Dog, or watch any of his comedies. He's a talented actor, and people just see him as like a singer-songwriter. They just see him as JT. They can't take him seriously. But, you know, again, watch this movie. I think this is might be his strongest performance to date. I think the performances all around are fantastic. Like you said, Juno Temple is phenomenal. And speaking of Apple TV, like if you want to see her in like the antithesis of this role, watch her in Ted Lasso, which is an incredibly good show and where she's the complete opposite character. So it just shows her versatility in this one. June Squibb, great. Just so great. I love her in anything. But I really do like this movie because I feel like it earns those moments of emotion. It earns those moments of sincerity, especially between Justin Timberlake's character and this young boy who Ryder Allen, for a first-time actor, especially a child actor, wow. So like, I am very much looking forward to what he does next. I think their relationship's really sweet and heartwarming. And I also really enjoyed the direction of the movie. I think Fisher Stevens gives it a nice kind of like voyeuristic feel where you kind of feel like you're just kind of following these two characters and like sharing that kind of intimacy with them, which I really enjoyed. At the end of the day, like it made me feel good. It gave me that kind of heartwarming feel. I felt like this character's, you know, redemption was earned. And I like that this movie kind of challenges like toxic masculinity in a way that doesn't feel like it's like spoon feeding it to you. So I thought it was an above average drama, and it just continues to show that Justin Timberlake is an actor that we should give a little more respect to, you know?
Definitely. We love you, JT. Joe, what about you? What did you think?
I was pleasantly surprised by this right off the bat. I had no idea what this film was. I recently, only recently, resubscribed to the Apple Plus TV thing. One, because of this, and two, because M. Night Shyamalan's Servant, which is on there. And maybe I'll watch Ted Lasso as well while I've got the subscription.
Really good.
but this, I had no idea what it was about. The poster, just the poster for me, I was like, that looks a bit boring. It's just got Justin Timberlake on there. And I was like, I have no idea what that film is about. So when you, Dan, said to me, oh, should we review this film? And I was like, yeah, we'll review it. I watched the trailer for it and I was actually like, wow, that actually looks pretty good. So I watched it and I was very pleasantly surprised. And I think it worked going in cold because I didn't really know what to expect. And I left and I, like Tom, I it made me happy. I felt uplifted. But like Tom rightly said, didn't reinvent the wheel. For me, I'd seen it before. I'd seen it so many times before that I couldn't really say I came out of it thinking, wow, I loved that. It's a powerful story, and I think it's an important story to tell, but it just didn't have that effect on me where it made me cry or made me feel overly invested in it. You know, say something like Frank, which was on Amazon Prime. I don't know if you've seen that yet, Dan.
Is that with Michael Fassbender, Frank?
Frank was the one, Uncle Frank, sorry, Uncle Frank.
Oh, Uncle Frank. Oh, great
yeah,
movie
with
too.
Paul
great
Bettany.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the opposite for me. That had a real emotional punch to it in that last half, because it develops that relationship and you can see that there's a history there between Paul Bettany and his father. And you're like, it's just going to be a bog standard history. But then you find out what actually happened. And you think, wow, that really blew me away. And that had a real emotional punch. With Palmer, I just didn't feel that punch. I enjoyed it for what it was. I thought it was, again, like Tom rightly said, an above average drama. My other half, Hannah, she really enjoyed it. And like 20 minutes into it, she was like, Justin Timberlake's a good actor, isn't he? And I was like, yes, he is.
There you go.
I'm not sure if there was something underlying that as well, the fact that she just suddenly decided to go, oh, Justin Timberlake's a good actor. It did. I was like, oh yeah, what else is he to you? But, you know? But yeah,
if there's strange noise in the night, you know what's going on.
I keep catching it, watching it again at like 2 a.m. I'm like, what are you doing? But she really enjoyed it as well, considering she was kind of on her phone in the first 10 minutes and then she kind of put it away and was really engaged with it. So I definitely think the story is there. I think it's a lovely, lovely film. But by the end of the year, I probably would have forgotten about it.
Maybe it was the beard. Maybe it was the gruffle nature of him. Maybe that's what really did it for her, you know? anyway, I cried like a baby. Cry me a river. He certainly made me cry, so I loved it.
Oh, you were sitting on that joke.
Yeah,
I can tell.
Yeah, I was. I had that ready for ages.
I switched off after my review, and I was just like, okay, get it in there.
When do I say it?
Moving on now to something post-apocalyptic, Joe. Gerard Butler is back, and he's Scottish in this one. He normally puts on an American accent, doesn't he? But he's full Scottish. I was expecting him to wear a Scottish bagpipes and everything like that, and a little kilt. Yeah,
just go all out. Just go. Just wear a kilt the entire time. Why not? Eh?
Absolutely.
But yeah, he is back in a disaster movie, but not the disaster movie you're thinking. You're thinking Geostorm 2. It's not that.
Oh, God.
When's that coming out?
I know. We've still not had Geostorm 2. What is up with that? COVID, probably. COVID. But no, this is called Greenland. And he's reuniting here with Rick Roman Waugh. I didn't realize he collaborated with on the last Fallen film, Angel Has Fallen. And if I had known that, I maybe would have gone in a bit more skeptical than I actually did with this. In this film, he plays John Garrity, who is an architect. And this is brilliant, okay, because I love disaster movies. And from the go, I was engaged, I was invested, because I knew this was going to hit all the kind of disaster movie tropes. We meet him at the beginning. You can tell he's a very important person. He's an architect. He wants to work on, and he's kind of looking at a picture of his wife and child on his phone. And you know immediately this is going to be a guy who is going to have to go above and beyond at some point in this film to kind of reunite with his family or build his family unit back up again. He's got issues with his wife. They're basically having a party one night, all the neighbors around, which ends up being a very awkward situation. And there's a comet which is going to fly past, and everybody's very excited to go, you know, see this comet fly past. Weird things start happening. Military planes are flying past. You've got military vehicles all around in the neighborhood. And Gerard Butler's John Garrity gets a notification saying him and his family have been chosen, one of the few to be chosen, for relocating to a secure location, as this comet, it's not going to go past Earth, it's going to go into Earth. Here's a clip.
Nathan, come on, let's go.
But the sky's on fire.
Let's go, get on. Okay, we're good?
Yeah.
There's a shit ton of fragments on that thing. Understand that one of them is a planet killer. And now they've grounded all non-military flights. I mean, what do we do?
I don't even know if this shelter relocation thing is real.
That is bullshit! And you know it! I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry. It's just please give us a call if you find out anything when you get there. Like where we can go to be safe.
You know I will, Ed.
So, as I said, I'm a massive fan of disaster movies. I love them. Volcano came out at the right age with Tommy Lee Jones when I was younger. I just watched that film on repeat. And then weirdly, with like disaster movies, there always seems to be like another, like a weird cousin released not long after it. So I think it was Volcano, and then Dante's Peak came out not long after it. So I had like two Volcano movies at a very impressionable age. And then it just made me want to go back and watch all the other disaster movies. Big fan of obviously like Roland Emmerich's movies. I like Day After Tomorrow. Is it a good film? But I still enjoy it for what it is. So I was very excited to watch this. And I was very, very impressed by it. I heard nothing but good things, and I can see why. Basically, this has all the tropes of a disaster movie, as I was saying. You know that Gerard Butler has got a history with his wife, his child. Maybe he's not been the best father. Maybe he's not been the best husband. And you know, like in Day After Tomorrow, there's going to be a journey. And the disaster is basically the kind of driving force to bring this family together. But what this does really well, and very differently from the disaster movies that we've seen recently, more specifically the Roland Emmerich movies like Day After Tomorrow, this reins her in a bit. This isn't all about the spectacle. It's got the spectacle there. It's got the, you know, the explosions. There's a really tense scene with like a meteor shower, which is terrific. But mainly it focuses on the family. It focuses on the family unit. And it is mainly a family drama, which I really appreciated. And I wasn't expecting that at all. So I think if you're going in just expecting special effects, special effects, special effect, you might be a little bit disappointed, because it's not that. It does have them in there, but it does rein it in. I thought Gerard Butler was brilliant. And it's got that vibe as well of like the Purge anarchy halfway through as well. There's like a kidnapping, and it's more about that kind of classic thing of, you know, it's the people that you've got to be scared of, not the disaster or whatever else. So I thought it was really solid. I thought it was really tense. I loved it a lot. It hit all the things I could want from a disaster movie. My only criticism is the final 10 seconds. Not needed.
Yes.
Not needed. I was so disappointed by the final 10 seconds of this movie. I couldn't even tell you. And like, honestly, I thought, when, you know, whatever happens, happens, I thought that is a perfect ending. Just leave it there now. And that would, again, further the kind of message of this family coming together. And I thought that would be a beautiful, different ending to a disaster movie that we never really see. And then it does the disaster movie thing that we've seen a million times before. So other than the last 10 seconds, I thought it was a real solid disaster movie, drama, thriller, with some great performances, great set pieces. And it's free on Amazon Prime now. So if you've got that subscription, use it. It felt like a cinema movie. And I loved that. What did you think, Tom?
I also surprisingly really enjoyed this one. But then again, I went in with slightly lower expectations because it looked very like small scale for a disaster movie. And I was like, oh, I hope this isn't like a direct-to-video kind of like waste of Gerard Butler. But I think Gerard Butler is like the B movie king, if you ask me. I will gladly watch him in anything. I love Gerard Butler. And like you said, it like in the intro, thank God they finally let him be Scottish, because like, let's just be honest, he can't do an American accent. And even when he does one, he still sounds Scottish. So like the fact they finally let him be, I was like, good, great. Don't have to worry about that anymore. It's not going to be distracting. But he's great in the movie. And I think he kind of got unfairly ridiculed for his performance for some reason, when I think he's kind of the emotional anchor of this movie. And I think he pulls it off effortlessly. And I think Marina Baccarin, who plays his wife, is also super good. I mean, the whole family dynamic is fantastic. Like you said, this is not like a normal disaster movie where it's nothing but special effects and action sequences. And I thought it was refreshing. I mean, not only do you get like this amazing inciting incident scene, like where like that comet like makes its first impact, which I thought I've never really seen in like a disaster movie before, kind of like the way it was so visceral and the way that it felt way more realistic than a typical disaster movie. And I like the fact that the movie sprinkles those action sequences throughout the course of the movie, where it doesn't feel like it's overdoing it. It doesn't feel like a typical disaster movie where, you know, it's nonstop action sequences, you know, one after the next. You really get to know this family, their history, why it's kind of a little bit murky, why it's a little bit rocky. And seeing this family kind of grow closer and closer as this event becomes more and more precarious. Like, I loved kind of taking this journey with them. I thought it was intense. I thought it had a lot more drama than I was expecting. It was way more grounded than I was expecting. And I thought that in terms of like being a disaster movie, I thought it really set itself apart because it actually cared about its characters. It cared about the emotion of this story. It wasn't just trying to entertain you. It definitely does entertain you. But I think at the end of the day, I really enjoyed it because I really liked this family and I wanted them to somehow find shelter to make it out of this. Even if they didn't, I was happy to take this journey with them. And like you said, there's some really great performances throughout this entire thing. I think it's a really well-made movie too for a disaster movie. Like Rick Roman Waugh, I think that's his name, where they worked on Angel Has Fallen, the last Fallen movie. Yeah. I did like his direction in that movie. I thought it was different. I thought it was interesting. It definitely felt a little bit more like it had more of a punch to it. So I like the fact that he added that to the action sequences in this one, where it kind of felt like you were really there with them. Like, it felt very visceral, really liked the sound design, really felt like I was immersed. So I really enjoyed that. The only gripe I have with this movie, I just think it's too long. I just think it could have been at least maybe 10, 15 minutes shorter. I felt like the little last like 15 minutes just felt like it kind of just got stretched out to a point where I was like, okay, I feel like we've wrapped this story up. I feel like you guys are kind of spinning your wheels at this point. But I think other than that, I really enjoyed this one. And I continue to love Gerard Butler and movies like these. And it was certainly a step up from Geostorm, which I'm definitely not praying for a sequel. Let's put it that way.
I've been praying every night since it's released. I've been like, please, Lord Father, get us Geostorm. yeah, I think
so you're the one.
I've got nothing else to add. I really loved this film a lot. I thought Gerard Butler, like Tom said there, he is kind of the emotional center of this film. I think he really carries the film a lot. Also, Marina Baccarin, if that's how it's spelled, and Roger Dale Floyd as the young boy, he was great as well. And you're right, Joe, on the surface, it has all the tropes, it has all the cliches of a typical post-apocalyptic CGI disaster film. But beneath that, it focuses a lot on a kind of a family struggling to survive amidst all this chaos. And it becomes a human drama about, you know, a family, about a divorce, you know, that, and, you know, surprise, they kind of fall back in love with each other. But again, it could have fallen into those real cliches, but the script is really good. The acting is great too. And those are the things that save it, I think. And you're right, this film only has a $35 million budget. That is crazy. And I feel like the way they used that budget was really effective, because I didn't really see a whole difference between this and like a Roland Emmerich film, to be honest with you. I thought they used the budget really effectively. And again, lovely visuals too. I like the fact that all you need to do is just see the background of the comet kind of approaching. And again, I had these moments of real tension, of real dread and anxiety, where I felt really kind of, I felt for them, and I was like, and then they were okay, and I thought, okay, great. And then it would happen again, and I'd be like, stop, you're playing with my emotions too much, Gerard. Yeah, I love this. And you're right, Joe. This would have been a 5-star for me, right? Until the last 2-3 minutes. And there's a moment, and I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a montage that happens,
yeah,
right? And
yeah, exactly. And
it cuts to black, and I was like, wow, that's really powerful and impactful. And then I was like, oh, here we go. It's like Roland Emmerich came in and was like, we can't finish it there, guys. Yeah, come on, exactly. We need a good external shot of the whole, you know, planet. So yeah, I love this. And like Tom, Gerard, keep making movies, okay?
For real.
Keep being Scottish. Be yourself, okay?
Just be yourself, Gerard.
If there's anything to take away from this show, be yourself.
Just that, guys. It's 2021. Moving on now to our final review of today's show. This is Malcolm and Marie, directed by Sam Levinson. This was shot, conceived, and released during lockdown last year. It was shot in June of last year. For 2 weeks, they shot the entire film, which was really excellent, I think. And directed by Sam Levinson, who also directed Assassination Nation, which was a film Joe and I watched, and we just didn't know what to think about it. It's a strange one. We found it kind of pretentious, but also really interesting at the same time. Mm. And he definitely leaves an impact on you, that's for sure. This stars John David Washington from Tenet and Zendaya. They star as Malcolm and Marie. They've been a couple. John David Washington, Malcolm, has just released a film. He's just had his kind of press screening where he's all the critics and all his friends have seen it. And he makes a rookie mistake. He forgets to thank Zendaya. And she makes him pay for it. Makes him pay over 2 hours. Here's a clip.
You know, you are the neediest man I've ever dated. But at the same time, you are also the least jealous man I've ever dated. I mean, I could literally be hanging on some random guy's arm and you would never think it's sexual. You just come up to me and be like,
hey, babe, what the hell are you doing? I need your help. I can't remember everybody's name here. Come on, let's go.
But whose arm are you hanging
on? That's the thing. It doesn't really matter.
Is this about tonight, Marie?
Kinda.
Kinda?
And that was a clip there from Malcolm and Marie. So I feel like my feelings of the film are going to be different to both of yours. And on this show, we always say, you know, be honest, be yourself. And if you don't like something, you don't like it. And this just wasn't my cup of tea. That's a very British saying, isn't it? It just wasn't my cup of tea. I really did not care for this at all, to the point where I had to watch it in 3 viewings, which is very rare for me. I watched Greenland from start to finish, but I had to actually stop it and then watch it the day after. I understand what it was trying to go for. I think on a technical level, it's good looking. It's a beautiful film. The visuals are great. The cinematography, the shots, the angles, and the score is sensual and romantic and sexy. And I was like, when it started, I was like, I'm liking this. And there's a lovely panning shot where John David Washington's kind of like climbing over things and she's making mac and cheese. And I'm like, oh, this is getting good. I'm quite enjoying this. And I just felt like this film should have been a short film. I genuinely feel like this film should have been a 20-minute short film, and they could have packed everything into that and made it far more powerful. I just found that it was repeating the same themes, the same commentary. And it has nothing to do with this whole controversy around white critics. That was a really interesting part of the film that I really liked a lot, even though they kind of targeted one female from a certain magazine a lot. That was a bit I found really interesting. And I think if you're going to be controversial, you go for it, you know, and that, make that the prime focus of your film. I found that this film didn't really know what its prime focus was. I found it jarring. I found it a bit self-indulgent. And I found it really exhausting. Like, I was tired after half an hour of it. I was like, listen, guys, you can carry on arguing. I'm going to go and have that mac and cheese because this is just too much for me. And I think the worst thing for me is that I just didn't invest in the characters. I felt like I had been invited to watch Zendaya and John David Washington just table read for 2 hours, just go back and forth, you know, like an acting exercise, like you would do at university or college. I don't know, I just couldn't invest with this. It's very meta, which I think is fine, but I just didn't feel like it was authentic. I couldn't invest in any of the characters. I just felt like I was watching two actors act for 2 hours, and I struggled with it. And I'm telling you right now, I did not want to dislike this film at all. You know, Joe knows me, like, I really, you know, I think it's important to support this kind of filmmaking, low budget filmmaking, but you know, I would say filmmaking that is on a visual scale really interesting, and what it's trying to talk about and the topics and the statement it's trying to make about society, I'm all for that. I support that 100%. I just couldn't connect to this. I don't know why. It just wasn't really for me. But Tom, what did you think of Malcolm and Marie?
For me, for the most part, I enjoyed it. Like, but like, again, I agree with a lot of the points that you made. Like, it does feel exhausting. I mean, it's almost 2 hours long. It's like you can only watch two people like just come at each other's throats for so long before you're like, all right, enough, go to bed. Like, it's just like, it's very hard to watch two people basically rip each other's hearts out for 2 hours. And but like when you have actors like Zendaya and John David Washington, who I'm happy are given like meaty material to work with, like they're very talented actors. Like John David Washington was wasted in Tenet. Like you really didn't get to see like his capabilities as an actor. And you can tell he's having like the time of his life in this movie where he's just going for it. He is swinging for the fences. And I like how Zendaya was kind of like the opposite. She was more like, you know, subtle and more reserved. And she was kind of like, her pain was very internal while his was very like external. So it was like a nice little juxtaposition between the two. The performances are great. Like you said, the cinematography is gorgeous. I love the camera work. Everything keeps it engaging and at least visually dynamic. So it's not too boring or anything like that when, you know, the movie starts to run out of steam a little bit. But like I said, I mean, when you said it could have been like a 20-minute short film, I could definitely see that, like give it 20, 30 minutes, maybe condense some of these arguments, maybe take out this little bit that's a little bit repetitive or take out this little bit that was a little bit unnecessary or maybe overly long. Could definitely see that point of view. But I think this is a movie that's certainly worthwhile simply for the performances, which are great. I think Sam Levinson is a very talented director. That's for sure. And there is some really great dialogue in this, even though some of it, like you said, a little bit self-indulgent, a little bit pretentious. Like there, you know, are some scenes where I'm like, okay, two people in a fight would never think this well. Like they wouldn't be able to articulate their thoughts this well. There'd be a lot more cursing, probably a lot more stupid banter. Like it just, there's no, like in a fight, like I think of the greatest thing to say like 10 minutes after the fight. Like that's where I'm at. So like when he's just like going on this rant that's so perfectly worded and so like beautifully delivered, I'm like, yeah, no way that happens in real life. But like that's like one of those things you have to like suspend your disbelief, because like these two people clearly almost like had both of their stuff like prepared, like they knew this day was coming. But there are some moments that are genuinely powerful where I was like, okay, this is a couple that definitely has like a rich history, where I like how they kind of clue you into like, you know, some things both of them have done in their past, kind of where they come from, their upbringing, you know, why they are the way they are, and kind of the dynamic of the relationship and how like you feel that history and it feels earned. It doesn't feel like it's just kind of like this quick summary. They're not the most likable people, but then again, like once you start learning more and more about them, you become a little bit more sympathetic, where you're like, okay, well, maybe I understand why they're having this fight, or like why they have still remained together despite the fact they seem so wrong for each other during a lot of these arguments. But, you know, in the end, it's less of a mixed bag and more of like a drama I would recommend if you're really in the mood for like a really like kind of hard-hitting dialogue-driven drama. But is it my favorite movie that I've seen so far this year? No. Were there times where I kind of checked out a little bit? Sure. But I do think that at the end of the day, I would still recommend it, simply just so people can see that Zendaya and John David Washington are way better actors than they are given credit for, and are definitely people to watch going forward.
Definitely. And I think the performances are the one thing for me which made me enjoy the film, I think, a lot more than you did, Dan. And when I saw your review last night, I was like, oh no, like two stars. I was like, this is going to be interesting. But I think also it is the type of film that you've got to be mentally like prepared for, in a way. Like you've got to be in a certain state of mind to enjoy this. Like if it's a Saturday night and you like sitting down with a couple of beers, I mean, watch Greenland if you're doing that, you know, maybe not don't watch this. But I just absolutely loved this film, and I enjoyed kind of like getting to the bottom of what was being said on screen, because I'd heard about the controversy and I'd heard that it is very self-indulgent. And then when I'm like picking up on all these conversations about the LA Times critic, I'm like, what is going on there? And I'm on my phone Googling as to see what's going on. I could kind of figure it out, but obviously I didn't realize Sam Levinson had directed Assassination Nation, a film which definitely stuck with me, even though I still don't really know how I feel about it. It definitely stuck with me. And when I saw that, obviously, he directed that and he didn't have a very favorable review in the LA Times from this female critic, it kind of all started to gel. And I realized that this is a very personal piece from Sam Levinson. And obviously, he is literally using John David Washington as a mouthpiece for himself. And I really quite liked that. I thought that was an interesting angle. And I think it's nice to see a film where a director just puts it all out there. And I think that sings true. And I think that was really interesting. But it is the performances which are the key thing. And John David Washington and Zendaya, they are two sides of the same coin. You know, like Tom rightly said, John and David Washington, he's loud, he's aggressive, he's very bolshy and great. But for me, Zendaya, oh my days, just such a tremendous performance, because it is the total opposite. It's reserved. It's not coming from a place necessarily of yelling, even though obviously she does yell. It comes from a place of like lip quivers. It's all like more kind of in the physicality, the little gestures that you see in that scene where she's taking the bath and John David Washington is basically just ripping her to shreds and she just sits there in silence. And how that builds through his performance, I thought was outstanding. And then to top it all off, the moment where she kind of takes a knife and you think she's literally having like a proper breakdown and you think, where is this going to go now? Because she's actually got a knife in her hand. That moment was one of the best things I've seen in film for a long time. I actually clapped. I'm on my own in the living room. No one's around. And I clapped because that whole turn, you know, in her performance, I just thought was absolutely brilliant piece of acting. So I was really blown away by her and John David Washington. And I think, you know, there's some people that I've said that they're like, you know, oh, nobody would be this kind of in a toxic relationship. If you're in this type of toxic relationship, you would leave. That's not true at all. You know, I know people from personal experience who've been in relationships for years and years and years when they know they shouldn't be with the person, but there's just something keeping them there, something anchoring them and keeping them together. So I bought it. I bought them as real people. I bought them as a couple who deep down love each other, but it's all this stuff like the ego and everything like that and all this water under the bridge which they just can't seem to get over, which is causing this rift in the relationship. So I thought it was brilliant. It is all about the performances for me, even though the cinematography is there, lovely monochrome kind of visuals all the way through it. It is a kind of masterwork of acting, and I thought Zendaya in particularly was absolutely tremendous. So for those performances alone, it's definitely worth watching. But as I said, maybe prepare yourself for it mentally before going in, because it is a bit of a slog as well.
Make yourself mac and cheese, have a nice glass of wine. You know, it's that type of movie. Or two or three glasses, or a whole bottle if you want to. I don't know. Yeah. Malcolm and Marie is available now on Netflix. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. It has absolutely flown by. Big thanks again to our guest on today's episode, Tom Chattelbash. Before you go, Tom, would you like to plug yourself where people can find you online? Because we want everybody to go and watch your reviews because they're absolutely excellent. So where can people find you online?
Well, first of all, thank you. Much appreciated. If they're looking for my reviews on YouTube, it's Chattelbash Reviews. So if you type that into the old YouTube search bar, you should be able to find a cartoon version of my face smiling at you. It might be creepy, but it also might be inviting. You decide. On Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, you can just find me at Tom Chattelbash. If you want to get updates on my videos or my thoughts on some of the latest stuff happening in TV and film, definitely check me out there. And yeah, it's been a pleasure, guys. Thanks you for having me.
Our pleasure. It's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for coming on. And you can follow us, the Danjo Film Show. We're on Facebook under the Danjo Film Show. You can catch us on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. And you can also listen to all our old episodes. We're on Mixcloud, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and iTunes. So make sure to listen to those. We hope you stay very, very safe, and we hope you keep well. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the Danjo Film Show. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.